National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week, Catholic students across the country celebrate Catholic Schools Week, and many of those Catholic parents are watching a Supreme Court case heard before the High Court on January 22nd. This case could change the landscape of school choice and bring an end to a long-standing anti-Catholic law. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen.
Is it good to be with you?
The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments regarding the case Espinoza versus Montana, a fight over a Montana scholarship program that would ease the tuition-related financial burdens of families who pay education taxes while also then sending their kids to private schools and paying tuition. So this nice situation in Montana that would have allowed people to get tax breaks over these tuition scholarships was blocked by the state, and it was blocked because of an old state law called the Blaine Amendment. And this is where our reporter, Wayne Laugesen, comes into the picture. He's been writing for the Register for a long time and quite a few stories on the Blaine Amendment and on school choice. So welcome, Wayne, to Register Radio.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, Wayne, you have been covering, first of all, you've been covering this topic of school choice and Blaine amendments for a long time, not only for the Register, but for secular outlets as well as other Catholic outlets. Why have you had this interest, first of all, in this topic, the Blaine amendments and school choice?
Well, since I started in journalism a long time ago, I have always been horrified by injustice. That's why I do this. Mm-hmm. And racial injustice, religious bigotry are two of the forms of injustice that strike me the most. And Blaine amendments are just a blatant violation of the First Amendment. Every legal scholar I've ever spoken to about this agrees. It's something that is clung to by the teaching establishment, by the teachers' unions, for their sort of selfish professional interests, even though the court has struck down more than 900 state laws since the 14th Amendment that violate our basic civil liberties. There is no more fundamental civil liberty than the one in the First Amendment that says, you know, the state shall be neutral on religion. It's not stated exactly that way, but hundreds of years of jurisprudence have shown that's what it means.
Right. Right. So let's backtrack for a minute and talk about what this Montana case was all about and why it made its way all the way to the Supreme Court. Who's involved in the Montana case? And again, why did the court take this one up?
Well, this started with Kendra Espinoza, a mother in Montana, had two daughters in public schools. One of her daughters was being bullied for her religiosity, for her faith in school. That's not uncommon. And the school wasn't doing anything about it. She put the child in a Christian school, and it worked out very well for them. The only problem was her ability to afford the tuition at that Christian school for two kids. She's working three jobs right now to try to pay all of the tuition. So the state came along with this scholarship program in which residents of Montana could put $150 into private scholarship funds run by nonprofits, and it would be tax deductible. Well, the State Department of Commerce hates stuff like that. They would rather control the money. So they challenged it on a basis of the Blaine Amendment. And these Blaine Amendments, you have to understand, the biggest lobbyist organization for Blaine Amendments was the Ku Klux Klan. They didn't want Catholic schools educating Catholic immigrants. Public schools would not educate them at the time, often turned them away. The Catholic schools picked up that responsibility, and Blaine amendments were created to put a stop to it.
Yeah, Wayne, a little bit more about this Blaine amendment, because it's almost unthinkable today that you'd have states still, 30-plus states with similar amendments. And is it possible that this court case before the High Court could actually bring an end to all of them?
It could. Now, I spoke with Amy Smith, the co-lead counsel on this case, she said that was never their intention. Was they didn't go into court thinking, well, we're going to wipe out 37 state laws, take them off the books in those states. But she does expect a ruling that says you can't use those laws to stop money from going to a scholarship fund that can then be used at a sectarian school. I think that effectively negates the whole intent of a Blaine Amendment. You know, Obergefell v. Hodges did not overturn all of the state laws that said marriage was between one man and one woman. It simply negated what they're still on the books in a lot of states. They just can't be used.
Right. Right. And I think that's been very clear. So just to be very clear with what the Blaine Amendments are, they are basically no aid to religion laws. And they were started by a representative who desired for this to be federal law. It didn't make it federally in the late 1800s. It made it into many state constitutions, either as amendments or just written right into the constitutions. And now 37 states have what is called this Blaine Law, after James Blaine. So this is what's at play. And as you said, I think we wrote, the editors of the Register wrote an editorial about this in our last edition. It was the February 2nd edition. And it's online at ncregister.com. And basically, we were making the point that these should be overturned, but just like you and Wayne, you spoke to people who are involved in the case, there isn't a real expectation that these are all just going to be overturned. But the court has been ruling in favor of religion in recent years. There have been cases related to school choice, related to Catholic schools or to private schools, that have basically allowed at least some material benefit to flow to the school, even though it is a religious school. So there is hope that this Montana family will continue to be able to send their child to the private school, as well as getting the tax credit for those who donate to the scholarship fund. So I think there's a lot at play here. It was a case that received a lot of support from school choice advocates, and these school choice advocates go further. You know, it's not just tax credits. What kind of people have been watching this case, hoping that it will affect them in their states and their school choice initiatives?
Well, a lot of parents who are a lot in the same circumstances as Kendra Espinoza. They want to put their children in some of the best private schools. Most of those have a religious affiliation. And to your point about precedent, there is no federal precedent at all today that says tax money cannot go to sectarian schools. Zelman v. Simmons-Harris in Ohio, it was an Ohio case the Supreme Court dealt with, I think it was 2004, and they put a stop to Ohio does not have a Blaine Amendment. So in that ruling, a state scholarship program was allowed to stand, and the court went into practical considerations that the children in inner city Cleveland were not getting the same types of educations that their wealthier peers were in suburbs and in other parts of Ohio. So both on a constitutional basis and on a pragmatic basis, they ruled in favor of the scholarship fund. And then we had the case in Missouri, Trinity Lutheran v. Comer, where a Blaine Amendment was stopping state assistance from helping with playground surface that was going to be safer for the children, and the school ruled that the money could go to the Lutheran school. Now, that almost got rid of Blaine Amendments, but it didn't go to content in the classroom. So that's mm-hmm. why we have this Montana Espinoza case.
Yes, and so the case, it was heard last week on the 22nd. What is expected next? The court is expected to rule when?
Sometime in June, I believe, we'll hear this ruling.
Okay.
And I spoke to a number of parties who were in the courtroom, and they're pretty confident this is going to go the right way. The only question is how Chief Justice Roberts is going to rule, and some of his questions indicated that he wasn't a big fan of this exercise, this anti-First Amendment exercise.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean, not a big fan of it? What was his impressions?
Well, it's interesting. So if you think about other forms of discrimination carried out by states. We used to segregate schools by black and white. So Brown v. Board of Education of Topeka put an end to that. It said, states, you can't do that. Race isn't even mentioned in the Constitution. Religion is expressly protected in the Constitution. So the race issue came up when the Chief Justice asked one of the plaintiff's attorneys, they struck this down. One of the legal questions is they struck down the whole program, the whole scholarship program. The Montana Supreme Court struck it down. And so they're arguing there isn't any discrimination because nobody's getting a scholarship.
Right.
And so the Chief Justice said, what's the difference if you have swimming pools and the state shuts them all down because some of the students in the pool are black? In this case, some of the students in the scholarship pool are religious. And the attorneys for the other side really could not answer the question. They
right.
were very much stumped by that.
Point
so it appears
same.
That the Chief Justice is making a comparison between racial injustice and religious injustice.
Absolutely. Yeah, that does. I do now remember. Thanks for reminding me of that. I do remember that exchange, and it was a stark moment, and I think a good telegraph of where it's heading. And it's, again, this court is a very interesting, interesting makeup. John Roberts has not been one to just strike down these kind of laws like the Blaine Amendment in one swoop. He's definitely looking at each case. And so, again, I don't want to get people's hopes up too high that all of a sudden school choice is going to be easy. I think we're whittling
right.
away at these Blaine amendments, and this is one more step to whittle that away. Wayne, we're always appreciative of the work you do at the Register and in covering, especially covering education and these kind of injustices. So we hope these stories keep coming.
Well, thank you. I appreciate doing it.
When we come back, we'll be talking to Peter Jessera Smith, who wrote a story about how Catholic schools can be more accessible to many more Catholics. This is Register Radio here on EWTN. Stay tuned for more.
Don't miss a moment of 2020. Try 6 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register today for free. Stay connected and follow the latest from Washington, D.C., the 2020 elections, along with events from the Vatican and the world. Only the National Catholic Register brings you in-depth news and analysis from a Catholic perspective. Award-winning journalism that goes beyond what you'll find from any secular news service. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. That's ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. Don't miss a minute of 2020. Call or click today. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, with Matthew Bunsen, my co-host here on Register Radio. And, you know, this week we've been celebrating Catholic Schools Week. Catholic schools across the country face many challenges. And there was recently a sobering analysis of these challenges that Catholic schools face. And covering that that sobering analysis was Peter Jessera Smith, our staff writer. And he wrote a story that not only focused on these challenges, but also the creative ways that some Catholics are handling those challenges. So, Peter, welcome back to Register Radio.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's great to be here.
So the question really is what is the future of parochial schools? And this is a conversation that we have had in our editorial room and with our writers for some time, covering both the good and the bad of Catholic, the challenges of keeping a Catholic school afloat. But you, Peter, as a parent, also know these challenges. So from, you know, just from your point of view, as a parent first, what are some of the challenges of parochial schools?
Well, I think one of the big challenges that that a lot of us parents a lot of us parents face, especially in the middle class, is that we kind of feel squeezed out of Catholic education that we'd like to give our kids. So, you know, for a number of people, you know, homeschooling is an option, but a lot of us would actually like the option of having of sending our kids to school, particularly if we're on two-parent incomes. And I've spoken with a number of people that have said, you know, I actually have to send my child to public school because Catholic school is out of reach and I'm in the middle class. So this is clearly one of the real problems that we're speaking of, because these are good Orthodox Catholic families that Catholic education was meant for that find it now out of reach. So that's what began this.
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, I'm sending, to speak of multiple challenges of Catholic schools, you know, I am sending my kids to a Catholic school. And, you know, one of the questions I always ask myself is this education that they're getting here sufficiently different from what they would get somewhere else? So, you know, it is great that they have religion once a day. It is great that they go to Mass once a week as a school. But is it really going to be that different of an education than what they have in the school district here where I live, where the school district, public school district, is quite good? So, you know, that's an important question, too, I think, that many people ask. Is the Catholic education thoroughly Catholic? But you did recently do a story that looked at not just our opinions or our questions or even just the questions of people we know and have talked to.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an analysis done by Richard Murnane.
And it's an excellent analysis because he's a Thompson Research Professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He did also with Sean Reardon, who's a professor of poverty and inequality at Stanford University. And what they found was the overall percentage of middle-income families enrolled in Catholic education was worse in 2013 than it was in 1968. The only demographic that actually had increased across all income levels were Black families in Catholic schools, which is fantastic. But they also found the percentage of low-income and especially middle-income Hispanic families, which is the plurality of Catholic population, in Catholic schools, that has simply cratered. I mean, you look at this graph, and it's just astonishing, because it shows that at one point, yeah, it was culturally the thing to do is that they go to Catholic school, and something has happened, and it's all across the board for Catholics who are in the middle class in every part of the country. It's worse, you know, in the Midwest and Northeast, but everywhere, it's all gone down. So, one of the key things that we found in this article that I did was Catholic education has to be, first of all, absolutely set apart from the free option, from the public school option. I mean, if you have two products and one costs thousands of dollars more than the other one, but they give you the same thing at the end of the day, you know, you generally choose for free.
Right.
But a lot of people want that solid Catholic education, that holistic Catholic education. And the question is, well, how do we get it back into the middle class? So we spoke to a couple different people with some insights on this. Brittany Vesely, who's the executive director of Catholic Education Partners, based in Denver. You know, she pointed out we got two roads really. Now, one is through public policy, where we expand school choice, and we get, you know, the money that's basically, you know, meant for our society to help families send their kids to school, which often goes to public schools, as a matter of course, get that back into the hands of parents and allow them to choose where they'd like to go to school. So we had a wonderful Catholic family that we talked to in Ohio that were, you know, extraordinarily happy that they could, you know, provide this Catholic, get this wonderful Catholic education for their son. He's coming, you know, he's getting that holistic experience of Mass and praying together with his peers. He's coming back home. They're doing, you know, the Epiphany chalk and various Catholic traditions. It's wonderful. Ohio has a school choice policy that has made it possible.
Right.
Problem is, not all states have that, which means we got to think about other creative options.
Right, and one of those options is the tithing option, and that's something we've also covered.
Yes.
Which basically allows for that education to be free through the parish as long as there is a very well-established tithing system, and there are a few places that that
yes.
exists.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that we found, the thing that we found doing this was you've got to establish the culture of tithing. I mean, tithing really is a real, not just a monetary support, but it's really a spiritual buy-in to the mission of the church and the mission of the parish. So I highlighted two examples. One was St. Gabriel the Sorrowful Virgin, and it's in the Pittsburgh Diocese area. Its school budget is $1.3 million a year. They have no endowment. It's completely free for K through 8, but it's completely funded from their over 2,000 registered Catholic families. It costs about $3,300 to educate each student, and it's all from the collection basket. That's the point, is they created a culture where they cut tuition completely and said, we as a parish, we as our church, are going to provide this. Another great example was the Diocese of Wichita, Kansas. Now, they also developed a tithing-based model to fully fund tuition of Catholic schools that would participate. So it's all based on tithing, private philanthropy, in line with the church's teaching. But it's the same thing. It's creating that culture so that we're all pulling our resources together to fund a top-tier quality education with highly qualified teachers who are also receiving just compensation in line with the church's own social teaching.
Right.
So it's and that's the Drexel Fund that supports 25 diocesan parish schools. So that's really the other way forward, honestly, is to have your parish or your diocese really generate this conversation and say, let's come together and develop this culture to to basically provide this Catholic education so that all our children, the poor, middle income or rich, can all enjoy the same education and then not be segregated by income or class. That's another important thing that this method does.
Right. And there was one other model that you that we haven't talked about yet, and it's this hybrid model. This was something the article pointed out. And by the way, the article's yeah. title for our listeners is The Future of Parochial Schools, Faithful Education Rides on Innovating Funding and Governance Models, Parents and Educators mm-hmm. Say. And so this is in the print edition of February 2nd, and it's also online now at ncregister.com. But that last model, it's one. It's a hybrid model, and
is
a Catholic homeschooling, but school model.
Yes, so, it's absolutely. It was absolutely fun to discover. This is the Holy House Academy, pioneered at the Cathedral of Our Lady Walsingham in Houston. Now that's the mother church for the Ordinariate of the Chair of St. Peter. And the interesting thing is it's a pre-K 4 through 12th grade homeschool enrichment program. But it meets on, it meets like, you can attend classes mainly one day a week, and then there's just an extra day. But the cool thing is that it's basically created a model where you can homeschool, you can do homeschooling, but then you're sending your kid to get this in-class experience being taught by highly qualified professional teachers and retired professors. And really what you do is your homeschooling kids are also getting a real preparation for then entering college.
Right, a classroom example. Environment. Exactly, a classroom environment.
Precisely. And so it tries to bring the best of both worlds to parents who had to choose who decided that homeschooling was the best option that they had.
Yes.
And it's something that parishes can do even if they can't do a full school.
Right. I think it's really interesting. There are a lot of parish-based co-ops and schools that are cropping up, at least. I'm familiar with one in Denver and another that's not parish-based here in Louisiana. And, this is on the rise, and the Register's been covering the homeschool movement and the rise of people interested in that for quite some time. So It's nice that this article, Peter, had all of these options in it, and I or these different approaches to increasing the quality and the reach, I guess, of Catholic education. So, as a parent of children in a Catholic school right now, I've been thinking a lot more about this. This is the first time I'm spending, you know, the money for the tuition, and so I've been thinking a lot more about Catholic education and talking to my family members and peers who are doing some of these other options. So Peter, I think this is something we need to stay on. I know for your own experience, because your children are just reaching school age, and of course your wife has worked in schools, so this is something close mm-hmm. to you, and I think close to many other people. And if you had to say in just a roundup, 30 seconds, what would make a Catholic school, you know, distinguish itself as truly Catholic? What would you want to see?
I would really want to see a Catholic school where, you know, fellowship of Jesus and, you know, really discipleship is just part of everything in the whole curriculum, the whole package from the get-go. And I'd like you to be part of a community that's really loving and supportive, where this is really a shared sacrifice that we make possible. For parents such as myself, we got a lot of student loans, and it really cuts down on our ability to send kids to Catholic schools. So let's have these conversations in our parish, and let's make it happen.
Absolutely. And I think stories like this do make it happen, and I think the community of Catholic schools is actually what is one of the most important parts, as long as that community is built upon Jesus, as you say. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.